Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion on politics, human rights, and the environment. I'm Dori Smith. We discuss a global surge in venting anger at George W. Bush, sparked by Iraqi journalist Muntazar al-Zaidi, who threw both of his shoes at George Bush during a press conference in Baghdad.
You know, the shoe has been elevated to an emblem of resistance to U.S. occupation. It's just remarkable.
But he'd rather have shoes, I think, than the hardball question.
We're joined by Ian Williams and David Lindorf, two U.S.-based journalists who share strong reactions to what al-Zaidi did. They are in general agreement that the al-Baghdadiyya reporter showed more willingness to stand up to President Bush than the White House press corps has over 8 years of news coverage. Al-Zaidi has sparked demonstrations all over Iraq. He remains in custody, though Shiite lawmaker Baha al-Arraji has said he expects him to be released on bail in the next few days as an investigative judge considers his case. Here now is the audio of the famous shoe incident.
Shukran Azira.
Muntazar al-Zaidi saying, "This is a farewell kiss, you dog." And then, "This is from the widows, the orphans, and those who were killed in Iraq." And then Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki's guards can be heard tackling al-Zaidi. And in the scuffle, White House press spokesperson Dana Perino got hit in the face with a reporter's microphone and wound up with a black eye. The Associated Press has mentioned in one of their recent reports that al-Zaidi reportedly spoke glowingly of al-Sadr, that would be Muqtada al-Sadr. We have no confirmation that al-Zaidi is actually a supporter of Muqtada al-Sadr, and it should be pointed out that while Muqtada al-Sadr has been militant toward U.S. forces, the U.S. has also tried to work with him and incorporate him into the new Iraq. Meanwhile, the Speaker of Iraq's parliament, according to AP, has said he would resign over the al-Zaidi incident. And al-Zaidi's family has said they were told by the investigative judge that they can't see him for 8 days. They're now fearful of his condition. Link TV, by the way, identifies al-Baghdadiyya television network that al-Zaidi works for as a channel that, in addition to news about Iraq and the great suffering there, also seeks to educate about tolerance and help reestablish a healthy Iraqi society and environment, establishing the Iraqi identity through the cultural and social heritage and helping to improve and modernize Iraqi society besides respecting spiritual and social values, staying up to date with scientific developments worldwide, and improving the aesthetic values of broadcasting. So that's Link TV, and you can watch that on your satellite dish or online.
The ladies here clapping, allow me please to address them. Thank you for attending this meeting. I see you are carrying a plaque defending Mr. al-Zaidi, who attempted to assault President Bush in Baghdad.
The peace group Code Pink attended a press conference in Washington, D.C., where they were clapping for al-Zaidi. And this was the response from the speaker, the Iraqi ambassador to the U.S., Samir Samaidi.
One, Mr. al-Zaidi is a very, very lucky man. It was Mr. Bush and Mr. Maliki and not Mr. Saddam Hussein. Because had it been Mr. Saddam Hussein, you would be carrying a different plaque by now. That's number one. Number two, in our culture, I know people have told you that throwing shoes at someone is a big insult. But it's a bigger insult to the host, not the guest. In our culture, anybody who insults a guest is insulting the host to a double degree. So even if it had been a local tribal leader, he would not have stomached that behavior. So in our culture, we believe that what Mr. al-Zaidi did was reprehensible.
What about what Mr. Bush did?
Here now, a woman asking the ambassador, what about what Mr. Bush did?
Let me just finish my remark. It was reprehensible. It was not representative of the way we behave as Iraqis. It diminished us as a nation. We're better than that. We have issues, whether it is with Mr. Bush or with other people, but we believe that we should always behave in a dignified manner and in the correct manner. And if we have differences, we express them in the right way. But as I said, and as Mr. Bush said himself, these are the fruits of freedom. Everybody gets the fruits of freedom, even those who don't know how to handle them.
We're joined now by Ian Williams, author of several books, including Deserter, Bush's War on Military Families, Veterans, and His Own Past, published by Nation Books. He's currently writing a book on the Americans who blame the UN for all of America's ills. Ian Williams' previous books are The Alms Trade, A Study of the Role of Charities in Britain, The UN for Beginners, and Rum, A Social and Sociable History of the Real Spirit of 1776. And Dave Lindorf, a columnist for Counterpunch magazine and author of several recent books, including This Can't Be Happening, Resisting the Disintegration of American Democracy, and Killing Time, an investigation into the death penalty case of Mumia Abu-Jamal. His latest book, co-authored with Barbara Olshansky, is The Case for Impeachment, The Legal Argument for Removing President George W. Bush from Office, published by St. Martin's Press in 2006. Ian Williams, first of all, welcome.
Always good to talk to you.
I'm going to read first from your piece, Bush Ducking the Shoe in Iraq. It was first in The Guardian and then in Maxim's News Network. You write, Zaidi has clearly epitomized Iraqi feelings across the board with protests in the streets and support messages from Arab journalists. Ironically, many of them, including Zaidi's own TV station, are comparing his arrest with the brisk way that the Ba'athists had with dissent. This is a little unfair. He is still alive, as far as we know, which is more than could be said for anyone who would have done that to Saddam. But it does raise the question of how the White House managed to tame the major media in the U.S. without even the implicit threat of shooting journalists and their families. You write, finally, as Bush gives up his dude ranch in Crawford to move to the McMansion that really suits him in Dallas, he should not be allowed to go quietly into that good night to file My Pet Goat into his presidential library. Better than throwing boots, prosecutors should be throwing the book at Bush and his accomplices. Let me just ask you, Ian Williams, was this piece your first gut reaction to this event in Baghdad?
That was my gut reaction. And you know, I actually, in my past, have had an Arab spouse, and I'm very well aware culturally of how significant both the shoe and the dog are in Arab culture. So it meant a lot when I saw it.
And Dave Lindorf, welcome.
Thanks for having me on, Dory.
Now I'm going to read from your piece, too. It was published in Common Dreams, commondreams.org. You write, Al-Zaidi listened to Bush blather that the half-decade of war he had initiated with the illegal invasion of Iraq had been, quote, necessary for U.S. security, Iraqi stability, and world peace. And something just snapped. The television correspondent, who had been kidnapped and held for a while last year by Shiite militants, pulled off a shoe and threw it at Bush, a serious insult in Iraqi culture, and shouted, "This is a farewell kiss, you dog." When the first shoe missed its target, he grabbed a second shoe and heaved it too, causing the president to duck a second time as Al-Zaidi shouted, "This is from the widows, the orphans, and those who were killed in Iraq." You write, I'll admit, listening to Bush lie his way through 8 years of press conferences while pre-selected reporters played along and pretended to get his attention so they could ask questions which had been submitted and vetted in advance, I have felt like throwing my shoes at the television set. You write. Dave Lindorf, your gut reaction?
For me, it was sort of like watching the shoe getting thrown was sort of deja vu because I felt like doing it so many times watching in press conferences.
Your suggestion, you say, is that the press corps used the remaining 5 weeks of the Bush administration to develop a new relationship with the presidency, one in which they drop all the phony propriety and tradition and start acting like boisterous news hounds of old, barking questions, laughing cruelly at inane answers, demanding follow-ups when they are given the runaround, and where necessary, walking out or perhaps tossing the occasional shoe?
Well, throwing shoes is probably not the most acceptable behavior for journalists at a press conference in the U.S. I think that it would have been very appropriate for American journalists at 7 or 8 years of Bush press conferences to have stood up to his lies and either walked out or used a hand signal that's popular in America when you hear a lot of BS, or, in some way to register that you're not going to just take being fed a line of garbage and lied to. I mean, geez, this is a president whose staff has infiltrated the press corps with fake reporters, put fake reporters on the job of pretending to write articles, you know, legitimate journalistic articles, and make legitimate video news reports and then get them aired on corporate media without any identification that they're rank propaganda. You know, and it's just been lied to repeatedly over and over, and yet they've taken it. These are the same White House press corps, many of whom were at that press conference in Baghdad because they follow the president, who allowed the president to simply stop asking questions of the dean of White House reporters, Helen Thomas, who was supposed to, by tradition, ask the first question. They just stopped asking her questions because she was the only one who was being critical. So reporters in the U.S. media can really take a lesson from al-Zaidi in that he showed that you really have to take a stand when the person who's running the press conference, whether it's a mayor, you know, or a governor or a president, is blatantly lying to you or is saying things that are patently ridiculous, as Bush was doing when he was claiming that the U.S. is winning the war in Iraq or that the invasion of Iraq was for U.S. security, ha-ha, or Iraqi stability, ha-ha, you know, or world peace was his third one, ha-ha. I mean, you go to war for world peace, that's like 1984. And the American media, at the press conferences for 8 years, has just accepted this kind of garbage from the president and just acted like stenographers and taken it down. And what al-Zaidi did was say, you know, in a very, very dramatic way, no, you dog. You know, but I'm not saying that American reporters should throw their shoes at the president, but I do think that there have been multiple occasions when American reporters should have stood up, you know, maybe even flipped the bird to the president when he's lying so blatantly, certainly called him on his lies and demanded that he retract them or explain them, and maybe even walked out of the press conference if he was just going to continue to lie. This is really dates back to about the Nixon administration, and it fortunately broke down during the impeachment period, but Nixon kind of established the notion of an imperial presidency where the president was more of a figure of awe and respect than the number one man of the people. People didn't have that attitude certainly towards Lyndon Johnson and not towards Kennedy or Eisenhower before. But since Nixon, you had this attitude that, you know, you have to have this sort of deference to the president on the part of the press, and it's gotten worse. It wasn't so bad under the Democrats, under Carter and probably Clinton, but Republican presidents in particular have adopted this attitude, and Bush very much so, with his $10,000 suits and his penchant for holding public events that are very staged. Even his press conferences have been fakes. You know, most people don't realize that the presidential press conferences now under Bush are not actually calling at random on reporters, but reporters have to submit their questions in advance, and they're vetted, and then the president decides which reporters he's going to call on in advance. So they're playing along when they wave their hands and act like they expect to be called on. They all know it's a game and that he's already decided who he's going to call on. This is not press conference. This is theater.
And another question here to both of you. Just comment on what George Bush said shortly after the incident, saying he didn't think al-Zaidi represented broader Iraqis, that this was just one man.
We know that he is a faith-based president, don't we? He doesn't know. He's going to stick to his beliefs no matter what the facts. And the facts are shown by lots of polls are that he is deeply detested in Iraq. He's deeply detested across much of the globe. You know, he's possibly the most unpopular president. You know, he makes Calvin Coolidge seem like a superhero. and yet he's not going to admit that. He's in his own cocoon, and he really thinks that he's done a good job for 8 years.
And Dave Lindorf, what's your take about Bush's theory that al-Zaidi doesn't represent broader views in Iraq?
I don't know whether he really believes that. I find it hard to believe he could be that out of touch, but maybe he is. You know, the presidential bubble around Bush is pretty extraordinary. He's a man who has, for 8 years, cultivated the idea of if you criticize me, you're gone. So, you know, maybe he does believe that, but clearly al-Zaidi is a hero in Iraq, and that belies the idea that most Iraqis like him. I don't think that. I think there's a reason why Bush goes into Iraq in secret. Nobody knew he was going there except for a handful of people in the Iraqi government. So that's not the kind of arrival in a country that someone who's wildly popular makes.
Ian Williams, what about the politics for someone like Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki in Baghdad? I mean, how he handles this could be crucial to his situation in Iraq.
He's in an unenviable position. I mean, he's well aware that most Iraqis want the U.S. troops out, and that does not mean by any means that they want Saddam Hussein or his supporters back. He's balancing. So the recent status of force agreement showed that. I mean, he sort of had to add all sorts of clauses in because Iraqi public opinion wouldn't tolerate it otherwise. And yet, deep in his heart, he also knows that his government wouldn't survive very long without U.S. support. So for the public face, he has to sort of want the Americans to go. And yet, privately, he's got to keep crossing his fingers and hope that they stay. It's a difficult one for him, and it's the same on this one as well. You know, he's got to strike a balance. He's got to show that the shoe throwers and people who show disrespect to his guests can't get away with impunity. But at the same time, he can't do anything too draconian because it will backfire on his standing with the Iraqi public.
And in your Guardian piece, you say a Senate report pointed the finger directly at Bush and his senior officials for authorizing, indeed ordering, torture and abuse of detainees, but no one threw any shoes, you quip.
It should really be headlines that the President of the United States authorized torture. You know, where's the shock? Where's the horror? The ABC interview with Dick Cheney, in which he basically says that he authorized waterboarding. I mean, they waterboarded, they tortured somebody 100 times. And he is unashamed and unrepentant about it. Now, you know, this is behavior that, with no exaggeration, would get a third world dictator in front of the International Criminal Court. If he traveled to Belgium or Spain or any of the places with universal jurisdiction, he would be up for arrest immediately. And this is the Vice President of the United States and the President of the United States, by their own admission, saying that they condone torture. We have Bush on the record as saying that al-Qaeda wasn't there before the invasion, but it doesn't matter. You know, and his subtext for the invasion was to beat terrorism and get at the people who did 9/11. You know, where's the indignation? Now, that's the key point. Everybody is still far too deferential to somebody who's been unveiled as a torturer, a liar, and a warmonger.
Just try to translate the emotion on the part of those who have seen this war close up and seen the burnt-out cities and dead children.
But you just have to look at Iraq. I mean, here's this country where it's between one-fifth and one-third of the population is no longer there. There's a minimum of 100,000 killed, according to the Iraq body count, possibly anything up to 300,000 or more, depending on whose counts. But we know of at least 100,000 dead, pretty much well attested for. Then you have, I believe it's 2 million refugees in Syria and Iraq and Iran, in Syria and Jordan and Iran in the vicinity. And then you have innumerable more internally displaced. You have people who can't move from one part of the country to another without being kidnapped. You know, there are armed militia. The people who were doing the killing last year are now all, they've all been halaled or koshered, depending which way you want to put it. And are now being paid for by the U.S. as pro-government militia. They've been bought in, you know, no matter how much blood was on their hands from last year. But this is a country that is basically, it's almost fallen apart. There are people dying of malnutrition. There are people dying of diseases because the sewage system and the water system and the power system have not been brought back to their pre-war standards, let alone improved. They've appointed a new government, which is filled with kleptomaniacs. It's one of the most corrupt countries in the world. Between the U.S. contractors stealing money and the Iraqi government ministers raking it off, there's very little trickles down. There's a lot for him to be indignant about, a great deal for him to be indignant about.
And what indeed do you think should happen to al-Zaidi?
It should be a rap across the knuckles, in a sense that there are rules, and difficult enough to get Bush to a press conference anyway if you know he's going to get shoes thrown at him. But he'd rather have shoes, I think, than the hardball questions. And we've seen his consistent evasions of press conferences. To that extent, Azaidi broke the rules of journalistic objectivity, but so do most of the others. If objectivity means that you overlook massive crimes and sins against the globe and the body politic, then that's not objectivity at all. That's being blinkered. So, you know, I think, yes, he should have a fine for disturbing the peace, perhaps. There'll be plenty of people happy to pay for it for him.
Ian Williams is a columnist for Maxim's News Network. His story is Bush ducking the shoe in Iraq, and you can find that in both The Guardian and Maxim's News Network. Ian Williams, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
We'll wrap it up here with David Lindorf. His website, by the way, is thiscan'tbehappening.net. David Lindorf, what about international reaction to what Al-Zaidi did in throwing those shoes?
Well, internationally, it's been a disaster for Bush. I mean, all over the Arab world, Al-Zaidi has become an international Arab hero. In Iraq, there are demonstrations calling for his release from captivity. Ordinary Iraqis are throwing shoes at American troops as they patrol through streets in Basra. You know, the shoe has been elevated to an emblem of resistance to U.S. occupation. It's just remarkable. It's been a disaster on a scale of what happened, say, when Nixon made his famous tour of Latin America and didn't meet a Latin American who didn't throw eggs at his car. Domestically, I think it's a mix. It was certainly an eye-opener to people to see how massively unpopular the president is, and see your president have a shoe thrown at him is really quite something. But, of course, you know, a lot of the press reaction has been, oh, that's horrible, the Iraqis, how could they be so rude to our president? But that's just nonsense. I mean, clearly, if a guy comes in and blows your country up for 5 years, you know, it's going to have that kind of reaction on some people.
Dave Lindorf, this Al-Zaidi incident has pointed up the vast difference in the two stories being told, one from Washington and another really from Baghdad. We've spoken to Dar Jamail, a journalist who spent 8 weeks covering this war close up with the people of Iraq, not an embedded journalist. Al-Zaidi mentioning women and children victims. And Dar Jamail happens to have a new piece in Interpress News, writing that, quote, 20 pregnant women might have only one doctor to help them deliver the child within a space of 1 or 2 hours. The husband of a pregnant woman due to deliver told IPS, hundreds of people who go to the hospital may find an employee or nurse, but no doctor. This, the real Iraq.
Real life in Iraq is a true horror. Come on. First of all, let's start with the numbers of dead. We know that from multiple surveys, from Johns Hopkins studies and other ones, The Lancet and others, that well over 1 million Iraqis, talking about civilians, most of them women and children, have been killed by the U.S. invasion and occupation. Far more Iraqis have been killed by American bombs and bullets and mines and helicopter gunships than have been killed by Iraqi terror attacks. I mean, multiples of 10 and more. And then on top of that, you've got 4 million out of 24 million people have been displaced from their homes. And then hospitals have been destroyed and not rebuilt. There's very little clean water. The sewers are running openly in the streets. Doctors have been driven out of the country. So it's not surprising that there'd be almost no doctors to take care of women who are pregnant. It's just a catastrophe, an unimaginable catastrophe for us in America. And it doesn't get written about by the mainstream American press, which totally focuses on the U.S. war effort and not on the people of Iraq.
Now, there are tens of thousands of Iraqis in prison, U.S.-run prisons and Iraqi-run prisons. What do you think will happen to this Iraqi journalist, Montazir Al-Zaidi, for throwing his shoes? We've seen reports initially that he could get anywhere from 8 to 15 years. Now they're backing down from that, saying it might be 2 years.
I would be very surprised if he does, because he is so popular. He was initially beaten, and I understand he has a broken arm and a broken rib and some other injuries, because you could even see him being beaten right on the floor in front of Bush, right while Bush was saying this was an act of democracy. He did nothing to stop the beatings, which an ordinary human being would do. And, you know, that was kind of brutal. But From what I hear, he initially was taken into custody by Maliki's personal guard and probably was treated rather badly, but now he's been handed over to the military, and my guess is that most of those guys probably think he did a great job. So, you know, he may be getting 3 square meals a day now and getting treated better. I couldn't say. I'm just guessing that, you know, the average Iraqi soldier probably doesn't have a great deal of love for the American.
And may I ask what else you might be working on that we can find at your website, thiscan'tbehappening.net?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to give away the store, but some key economists in some very central places in the Federal Reserve and elsewhere are saying that there actually was not any credit crisis at all and that the whole bailout is based on a fraud. And if that's true, then what we're really looking at is hundreds of billions of dollars have been simply shoveled into the pockets of Wall Street investors at the expense of the taxpayers by an administration as it's going out the door. And that's all money that should have been used to stimulate the economy.
I've wondered, you know, what else is at stake here? You know, is it investments? Is it an aging population? You know, what are they really most concerned about on Wall Street these days?
They're most concerned about ripping off the country as much as possible and taking away as much money as they can before the economy's left a smoking ruin. That's basically it.
And they expect the smoking ruin, are you telling me?
Yeah. By the time Obama comes in, the economy is going to be a smoking ruin, and the government along with it. I don't think they're trying to bankrupt it, but they're trying to rip off as much money out of the system as they can. I mean, we just heard that the Fed's printed $1 trillion since October. Just, you know, run it off the press. $1 trillion hasn't been done since World War II. So you look at that and the desperate decision now to lower interest rates to, what, 0.25%, that's an invitation to hyperinflation. So welcome to the Weimar Republic. It won't be that long before that has to happen. If you debase the currency by just printing paper, it's just a matter of time before it's worthless.
I guess I've been waiting for the other shoe to drop, so to speak, so that we can find out what some of the agendas are behind the stories. Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich, you know, fighting impeachment. The incredible scandal on Wall Street where the former NASDAQ chair, Madoff, stole so much money that I think they're going to have a hard time counting it. Just wondering, what else are we going to learn about?
To steal a title from Paul Krugman, it's the great unraveling. You can hide these things by doing something else to hide the last thing, but eventually it catches up with you, and I think we're starting to see it all catch up. But I think part of it also is that these guys are leaving office and they're less concerned about it now because they're just trying to scoop it all up as fast as they can and hold it all together as long as they can before they walk out the door, and then it's someone else's problem.
Any thought that there might be some element of pushing some out into the public fray so that others can be protected?
There may be some scapegoating. Yeah, I think that's pretty standard behavior. You throw a few people to the wolves, sort of like that story. I forget who wrote it. One Russian novelist had this scene with the troika going through the woods as the pack of wolves is running after them through the snow, and one by one they're thrown off the back to the wolf to slow down the pack. There's a little of that, I'm sure.
Dave Lindorf, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me, Dory.
Dave Lindorf, an investigative journalist and columnist. His latest book is The Case for Impeachment, out by St. Martin's Press. His work, again, available at thiscan'tbehappening.net, where you can find that upcoming story about the economy and what really happened. For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dory Smith. This program produced at the studios of WHUS at the University of Connecticut in Storrs, Connecticut. WHUS.org to listen live Wednesdays at 5 p.m. TalkNationRadio.org for transcripts, audio, and discussions. Our music is by Fritz Heed, fritzheed.com.